It's easy to dismiss concepts or ideas that seem uncomfortable, confusing, or unreal. The Nebulous is a new podcast that explores perceptions about complex themes relating to the human experience and the ambiguities of the human mind. I'm Lexi Smith, and I invite you to challenge your beliefs, open your mind, and learn from a medium, hypnotist, dream specialist, philosopher, and a psychic about the hazy nature of their work. In each episode of The Nebulous, we help untangle, explain, and define aspects of controversial topics and share a passion for obscure experiences. The podcast attempts to understand unique themes that have many critics and no definite answers. You may find you have more questions and opinions about these subjects than you ever thought you would. Subscribe to The Nebulous today. Dreaming is a concept that allows room for a million different subjective interpretations. There are various opinions, myths, and rumors that engulf dreaming, giving people the freedom to believe what they want about it.
I think that dreams do sometimes have meaning and sometimes don't.
I would say that some of my dreams mean something, but some of them are also completely random.
I think they give a good perspective on your mindset at the time.
Yeah, I think dreams have like symbols that mean something going on in my life.
I mean, I think that they mean things that kind of happened in your past.
Now, maybe you don't have a stance quite yet. If you're like me, maybe you have no idea why you dream the things you dream. I find myself wondering, though, does our reality and our dreaming really have anything to do with each other? Are they correlated or related in any real way?
Throughout the normal waking day, we consume an incredible array of experiences.
This is Ruben Nyman, a psychologist, clinical assistant professor of medicine, and the sleep and dream specialist at the University of Arizona Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine.
You know, we see things, we hear things, we taste, we touch, we smell, we have conversations. We have all this information and experience and feelings and sensation. All of this goes through us every single day. We consume an immense array of experiences. Many of those experiences are easily digested. So I'm looking out now, I'm looking out at trees and mountains and a partly cloudy sky. And there's nothing jarring about that. If I looked outside and I saw, oh my God, there's a plane crashing, that would be jarring.
So our dreams do reflect our reality. Things that exist in our day-to-day lives tend to appear in our dreams as well. Obviously, not everything we see and encounter is going to show up in our dreams every night. We know this from our own experience and our own dreams. But do we then subconsciously decide what it is that we dream about?
Even when we see something that is reflected, something we saw that day or days before, they're going to show up in the dream only if it's symbolically relevant to who we are. So even though we might say, oh, you know, I dreamt about a baby because I saw a baby the other day. Well, that also means that there's something interesting about the image of a baby at this point in your life. More than just a repetition, it's a meaningful repetition.
Now that we've addressed the first two standpoints of dreaming, the ones that think everything of them and the ones that think nothing of them, it's important that we include the third stance, and that's people that claim to simply not have them.
Generally, I think if somebody is clinically depressed, it's really important to look closely at what's going on in their dream lives and to determine if they're dreaming insufficiently. But if someone doesn't remember their dreams, it doesn't mean that they're not dreaming. They could be dreaming and just not paying attention to it.
We're discussing dreams, what they are, what they mean, why they seem to happen. Let's uncover why dreams are important and why any of this conversation matters. Let's dig deeper than the typical mindset people tend to have about dreaming.
What dreaming does is it kind of stretches the mind. It opens the mind. It creates a larger sphere. You know, it expands consciousness. Dreaming is like psychological yoga. So when we do yoga, we stretch. We stretch our muscles and our fascia. We open our joints, bigger space in the body, if you will. So dreaming does that psychologically. And if people begin to dream and begin to pay attention to their dreams, it's really hard to live the kind of life that we deem normal, you know, the ordinary, mundane, really restricted, boring lives that so many people live.
So to enforce creativity and to give us the fulfilling life that we all seem to desire, dreaming is an essential feature to that. But life is kind of chaotic, and it doesn't always encourage us to take on a healthy and innovative mindset like this one.
Why, as a society, are we in such deep denial about dreaming? We can't continue to live the way we live in our world and dream. We generally live in a very small-minded world. People are so preoccupied with little things like themselves versus others. They're preoccupied with survival, you know, with money. People are preoccupied with their appearance, with their looks, you know, with a lot of small things. Now, I'm not saying that these things are unimportant, but I'm saying that they're out of context, that we lose the bigger picture.
Here's what's interesting. We may be taking this experience, this chance, and destroying it without even intending to.
What we know is that lifestyle negatively impacts dreaming. Drinking too much in the evening, particularly after dinner, dramatically interferes with REM sleep, reduces REM sleep. Cannabis, many, many people are now overdoing the use of marijuana. The data that we have to date is not complete, but it strongly leans in the direction of suggesting that cannabis suppresses REM sleep.
And maybe dreams haven't always been your number one concern while rendezvousing on the weekend. But it is something to think about.
It gets worse. Most psychiatric medications, tranquilizers or benzodiazepines, significantly suppress REM sleep. These are the most commonly used psych medications in the world. Most antidepressants, extremely common. There are millions of prescriptions of these written every year. Most antidepressants suppress dreaming. As the population ages, a lot of people use a kind of medication, a class of medication called anticholinergics. Millions of people taking various anticholinergic drugs. The most common ones are allergy medications. They significantly suppress REM sleep. Most sleeping pills interfere with REM sleep. And people who can't sleep through the night, who are awakening in the middle of the night, are not so much losing sleep time as they are losing dream time. Sleep apnea, another sleep disorder on top of insomnia, significantly interferes with REM sleep. So when you look at the data about the extent of the use or practices of these factors, it turns out that probably tens and maybe even more than 100 million people are experiencing limited dream sleep on a regular basis. We have lost our dreams. We've lost our dreams.
I'm thinking of all of these things that we put into our bodies in hopes of making us feel better. And imagine how often the average person is actually doing that. But if the idea here is that we shouldn't be suppressing our dreams because we should allow them to happen naturally and as a tool to process our thoughts and emotions, then what do we do if our dreams become too overbearing?
So by definition, the difference between a bad dream and a nightmare is a nightmare is so bad, it wakes you up. If it doesn't wake you up, it's just called a bad dream. If it wakes you up, it's technically called a nightmare. So nightmares are normal, certainly not if you're having them very frequently. But frequent nightmares are common when people have trauma. They're part of post-traumatic stress. And so a nightmare is trying to digest a really intense experience. And certainly in the military, if you show up with a nightmare, they're going to give you medication to push the dream away. So in my work, we call that symptom suppression. You're not healing it. You're pushing it away. You're suppressing it. I really believe it's helpful to trust the nightmare and to work with people and to work in a group and to talk about it. We have ways of doing that, and that helps with the digestive process so that you can heal from it and not continue to run from it.
I'll admit that trusting a nightmare is a bit out of my own comfort zone, but you could look at it from the standpoint of some doctors, stop having them and hope the healing process occurs without it, or Nyman's, which is to have them and face them in order to eventually reach a state of peace. I'm beginning to see more of the good that having these genuine and authentic dreams could really be for us.
So the two main health problems. One is clinical depression. We need to dream well to heal depression. Ironically, we give depressed people medications that suppress the dreaming, because some of the symptoms of depression are actually the result of the dream trying to come back. The dream is pushing its way back, and that causes discomfort and other subjective experiences. It's a little bit like if somebody has an infection and they're running a fever. We think the fever is part of the disease, but it's not. It's part of the healing. We psychologically tend to look at the dream, the excessive pressure to dream, which comes when we're not dreaming enough. We look at that as part of the disease, when in fact, it's the body and the brain trying to heal us. It's what we call endogenous healing.
Nyman's connections between dreaming and mental health offer a new perspective about why we might feel the way we do. But he also wants us to consider that that might not be all there is to it.
The second major one is compromised memory. So we know also, we've had data for years showing that memory, certain kinds of memory are formed or consolidated in REM sleep. We need to dream in order to have healthy memory, to form memories. So people who don't dream well have memory problems. As people age, because of all these other factors increasing, they tend to dream less, and we associate aging with memory problems. People who dream really poorly have dementia. I mean, really serious memory problems. In fact, Alzheimer's, a very common form of dementia, very serious, is strongly linked to a loss of dreaming.
So if we want to seek the benefits that dreaming can bring to us, how do we get better at dreaming? I mean, it's never something I really thought of as a talent or a skill or something that you could train for. But is there a way to be better at it?
It turns out that grogginess is an exquisite state of consciousness, and that's where we find most of our dreams. So the recommendation, the practice here, number one, wake up slowly. Don't jump out of bed with an alarm. See, most people wake up with an alarm, which is it snips off the end of our dreams. It's like being chased out of a movie theater during the last 5 minutes of a picture. People say, well, how do I awaken without an alarm? There's a really simple way to do that that most people don't like, and that is to go to bed earlier. We will wake up without an alarm if we go to bed earlier. So we want to wake up in a quiet way, but keep your eyes closed. If you've moved when you awaken, resume the last sleep position you were in. Keep your eyes closed. Now, here's the hard part. Do nothing. Linger in your grogginess, but do not look for the dream. Do not chase the dream. Because as soon as we start doing that, we're introducing excessive waking consciousness. So just be with it. And sooner or later, even if you haven't remembered a dream in a long time, you'll remember that there was a tree. That's all that comes. Whatever it is, even if it's just a fleeting image, take the image out of the tree and bridge it to the waking world. In other words, write it in a dream journal and or talk about it. The dreams will start to flow. It might take a few days or a week or two, but you will open that channel between the unconscious and the conscious world.
Obviously, the technology to watch someone else's dream is not in existence. A lot of this conversation takes an open mind and critical thinking. But to Nyman, dreams are not something that should be thought of passively or forgotten about. They mean something.
Dreaming is about a collaborative dialogue with the unconscious. The dream is not going to tell you what to do, but it will better inform your life. It rounds out your life. I'm looking out now at a bunch of trees, and they're beautiful. But it's so easy to forget that the trees have roots, and there's much of a tree underground as there is above ground, and it draws its stability and lots of its nourishment from underground. And we are just like trees. So sleeping and dreaming are the roots of the tree of waking life.
Dreaming is pretty much what you make of it. Treasure them, don't. But if dreams are the root of our waking life, what damage are we inflicting upon ourselves by not experiencing them? Think about trying Nyman's ideal way of waking up, track them in a journal, bridge them to the waking world. It can't hurt you. And maybe, if you're lucky, you'll gain a whole new perspective on your life. Thank you for listening to The Nebulous by Boise State Public Radio. I'm Lexi Smith. Music by Coag, Kai Engel, Kevin McLeod, Chris Zabriskie, Ether, and Keys of Moon. Sound design by Travis Huff and Josh Lindgren. Consider a world where spirits live among us. How would this alter our reality?
It's a tremendously huge change of the mind to realize, oh wow, this is just a little piece of life.
Anisha Ryan Carey, a medium, on the next episode of The Nebulous, a podcast by Boise State Public Radio.